From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 305 with guest Robert Smith. Recorded Thursday, February 14th, 2013. Run As Radio is produced each week by WAP Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. I'm going to get right into it today. My guest is a returning guest, Robert Smith, who's a senior premier field engineer with Microsoft, specializing in platforms. He's worked on performance analysis, debugging, optimization, storage technologies, and troubleshooting, and has been working a lot on virtual desktop implementations lately. So let's get right into that. Welcome back, Robert.
Thanks, Richard. It's good to be back.
So you're working on a white paper as well.
Yes. So I spent quite a bit of time, and the white paper started because I'm trying to optimize Windows on a laptop so I could get my laptop to last for a long plane ride, you know, like 3.5 hours.
Sure.
And, you know, what I found was that optimization could just as easily apply in many cases to the VDI environment. So I just simply took it a step further, and I went through everything. I went through existing IP that was out there from, you know, other people that have started white papers and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I found that there were some gaps that I wanted to fill in, and I just did that, and I noted, you know, the sources appropriately. And then so there's a white paper forthcoming from TechNet.
Nice. And I appreciate that you guys are, you know, fun thing about PFEs is you're out in the field working with customers, implementing these technologies, and you come back with some awesome knowledge about how it's actually working in the field.
Yes. And, you know, that's because a lot of times in the environment, we see things that just we couldn't test in a lab, or
sure,
just we couldn't scale big enough to see these types of problems that we kind of run into sometimes.
Yeah, there's no substitute for what reality actually does. How many desktops, what configurations, what networking conditions, you know, I'm at a place these days with my customers and scaling websites where it's like, we've got to test in production. There's just no other way. You know, you cannot simulate reality well enough anymore. Reality is weirder than we can think.
Yeah, what we actually can do with the VDI in some cases, we have what we call a test pilot group.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll come up with a new, what's called a gold image, you know, and the gold image is the base image. But I'll back up just a little bit and talk the difference between pooled and persistent VDI. Pooled is where you get to log on to a computer and you use it, a virtual computer.
Right.
And then when you log off, it goes away. So it's nothing persistent, your settings and all that. Now, persistent is where you could actually get assigned a machine that you log on to over and over, and you install apps and things like that, and they stick around.
And so do they actually, when you log off, they keep running, or they get saved to disk as is, sort of a, like a hibernate state?
In our case, the VMs, they can't hibernate
right
on Hyper-V, at least not yet.
Mm-hmm.
I think they can in 2012. But so right now, if you just log off, yes, your machine keeps running.
Right.
And we've actually used that as a workaround because one of the big problems we've been troubleshooting is long startup times. It's very aggravating. You know, so the way that people get to their machine is they go to this web portal. It's a web page.
Yep.
And they'll see these icons for whatever is available to them. And they'll see their persistent machine. They'll click that. And then there's just some delay. And, you know, it could be 5, 6, 7, sometimes 10 minutes, depending on network conditions and loads and all that. We've seen long log-on times.
And then you're basically copying that virtual image down to the local machine?
So what happens is there is a static read-only gold image, which is the base image plus any security updates and settings.
Right.
Then you have a differencing VHD. And between, there's this magic that happens, and Citrix is actually the component that I'm most familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
And it does this merging of this gold image with the differencing bits to present you this machine that, you know, you really can't tell much different.
Right.
It just appears as a Windows 7 computer. You don't get, because it's, you know, through RDP and all that, you don't get arrow glass and stuff like that.
Yeah, you still are remoting into an image.
Yes. It's a virtual machine, and You know, there's a lot of very good, you know, compelling reasons for that. You know, like I've had people tell me, wow, you know, we lost power in our building. I had to go to another building, and I was so happy when I just log in. There's my environment up, ready to go.
Right.
It's just is where I left it off.
I mean, so it's not copying it down to the local machine. You are remoting into it, but it does take time to sort of merge together that base image with this additional characteristics and the patches and so forth. So it yeah. slowly gets slower and slower.
Yeah. Most of that happens, though, when you actually do a restart.
Mm-hmm.
And until you do a restart, it's just log on, log off. And that's very quick. The user base that I deal with have been trained that they have to log out every night.
Right.
And that's because there used to be a policy for XP and whatever that you had to log out because we had to patch the machines.
Right.
Well, we don't patch the machines with the same paradigm that we used to.
No.
The machines are patched through this process of somebody takes the gold image, and they can do this offline.
Mm-hmm.
They take this gold image and they open it up, apply patches and settings and whatever you need to do, and then they reseal it. Once they reseal it, it's now an incremented version. It's a new version of the same image.
Right.
And so the next time, if that happens and they promote a new image, then the user, the next log on might take a long time because mm-hmm. there is a new merge.
Right.
But after that, the subsequent log on shouldn't take any more than just a regular PC.
So, and therein lies that trade-off. Rather than forcing the log off every time and have that start up every time, now it's just when the gold image gets patched, there's this merge period the next time they're using it to sort that stuff out.
Yes. And that one can take a little bit of time.
And, I mean, you know, the frustrating part about it is you have a 7, 8, 9 minute wait to get going, where a lot of new machines, like my Ultrabook, boots so fast, still in Win 7, I might add, that it can't finish drawing the Win 7 logo before it's booted.
That's true. And then Windows 8 now, I think it boots up. You can get, like, what, 11 seconds up to 20. But, yes,
yeah.
Very quick. That's what people want. They want... You know, really, they're okay. They'll tolerate some difference because they know it's a different environment.
Sure.
They still want 2 minutes, though.
Yeah. I mean,
anything longer than that is pretty tough to explain.
It's the settle in the desk posture, right? As I'm sitting down, I start this thing, and now I get comfortable in my chair, get my coffee in place, sort of, you know, shuffle my things around, and then you should be good to go.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, I can live with a couple of minutes there. 10 minutes is so long, I can go away, get my coffee, and come back, and you're still not going.
And once we can, you know, get the word out, as it were, and, you know, let people know that they don't have to log out, they just disconnect.
Right.
And they find out the next time they connect, it takes like 2 seconds, they're ecstatic. And now all of a sudden, you know, they don't mind once in a while, you know, okay, maybe on Friday I have to log out, and then Monday is a slow login or something. But
yeah.
At least during the week, you know, or maybe for 2 week period of, you know, whatever the patch cycle is, they'll have that experience. They're happy. They're just ecstatic when they figure that out.
Well, and presumably anybody running a VDI implementation is not running on Patch Tuesday. They're running their own WSUS server, and they're patching probably their gold images on the weekends so that Monday is the day you take the hit.
That's pretty close. Yeah, that's what we do. That's pretty close to our schedule.
Sure, okay. And are we talking specifically about these persisted VDIs having these boot problems, or is it the pooled ones?
No, we see it in both.
Okay, because for the same reason, it's the patching.
Well, it's the patching, but, you know, the rest of it has been kind of a mystery. You know, people are, you know, they come to us, the Microsoft people mm-hmm. anyway, and they'll say, you guys need to explain to me what's taking so long. So
right.
Then we dig in with various tools. I've tried using the Windows Performance Toolkit because it has a great boot tracing tool called XBoot Manager.
Yes, awesome tool.
The problem with VDI in this particular case is that XBoot Manager tries to inject itself so early into the boot process that it doesn't work.
Oh, I see.
Because what happens is with the merging process, there's a filter driver that's installed during the boot execute phase, which is, I mean, right at the beginning of boot. And that's what provides the magic of marrying the gold image to the differencing disk.
Mm-hmm.
And so if that, you know, boot manager tries to start right about that time, it's too early and it never works. But we've had great success using Process Monitor, the sysinternals tool.
Oh, yeah.
And because it has a boot logging and it actually writes to the page file, it'll create a temp file in the Windows directory. of your trace. But anyway, once you log back in, the thing you have to remember is you have to remember to log back in and turn it off, or it'll keep logging for a long time.
And there's some overhead there. It's going to eat up a bit of disk space.
Yeah, a little bit.
You basically set up process monitors, boot monitoring, and then you shut down, reboot, and it does the recording then?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we've had great success with that. You know, I was very happy because I was starting to worry about that.
And this is just a detailed log, step-by-step, the order things are loaded in, what errors it was having, what retries it was doing. I mean, I've pounded my way through a few of these logs.
Yes, you see registry access, you see network, you see login script, you see, you know, the time, the duration.
Sure.
For example, you'll see a script processing, and you'll see, wow, this took 30 seconds.
Yeah. Oh, the classic one is missing network connections, and you've got remote scripts you're trying to call to. There's all kinds of stuff where you're like, wow, you thought that was a good idea, but it's expensive.
That's true. And the other one is, you know, sometimes when you start going through these boot logs, and what's nice is you can export the data. Mm-hmm. You can filter it down, then export it, get it into something else like Excel or whatever, and then you can sort it, and you can present it, you know, and show people. The script says, you know, group policy XP, why are you still applying that to the Win 7? Oh, we forgot about that. We probably need to remove that.
Right. And it's spending 30 seconds trying to talk to look for a policy that doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah. For some, you know, like it's trying to validate some setting in XP that you may or may not even apply to Win 7.
Yeah. You start to see the consequences of years of debris. My personal Active Directory infrastructure, which I set up the beginning of AD back in 2000, it still has some baggage. You know, you keep upgrading and migrating and upgrading, you carry some baggage along with you, and it comes back to haunt you in these long boot times.
Yeah, it's amazing. And, you know, while I was researching, you know, how can I do a better job of analyzing this, I found these videos on Channel 9 MSDN.
Mm-hmm.
There's this two of them, Defrag Tools, I think it's Andrew Richards, and one of my coworkers from a long time ago, Chad Beter, had some input into that as well. And these are fantastic videos because he shows you examples step by step how to, you know, filter down to the period that you're looking for of delay. And through that process, you know, I was able to, you know, and I haven't even had but one crack at it so far. I'm going to go back and do it again next week to the customer site. But I'm able to show, and they're always looking for a magic bullet.
Sure.
Just tell me what it is. Well, it's usually a multitude of things added together.
It's not like of those 10 minutes, 9 of them was doing this one thing. It's 20, 30 second events. You know, it's that those, all those little bits add up.
That's exactly right. And then the other one we found was we've been having a little bit of challenges with the antivirus.
I got to imagine any low-level tool, anything that works at that sort of core level of a system, virtualization really messes with their world.
You're absolutely right. I'll tell you one of the things. Okay, so I told you earlier about this differencing disk.
Sure.
And if you are on a VDI machine and you look in Windows Explorer, you'll see a C drive. So
yep.
Let's say you try to create a directory on your C drive and it'll apparently work. Well, that doesn't really happen because you don't have access to the C drive. What happens is there's this background duplicate I.O. that's directed to your differencing your disk. It's called a PVD or a personal VDisk, at least with Citrix terminology.
Yep.
And so it's redirected to another disk. All your settings are there, but they're redirected. This is actually one of the big problems we ran into. The antivirus exclusion, if they're set up properly on a normal machine, they work fine. But if you set up those same exclusions and you say C drive, well, it's possible that there's I.O. to another volume that the antivirus is intercepting and interfering with.
Right.
We saw that a lot of times. I'll give you an example. We have these developers that work with these Java runtime files, and they're called .jar files.
Yep.
And .war files. What we saw was they would try to copy a file just from one folder to another, and it would take like a minute, over a minute. It's just a small file, like 30 megabytes.
Right.
And they were so frustrated, they couldn't explain it. Because imagine if you were doing that all day, and you had that same sort of experience all day. So the first thing we did is just turned off antivirus. We used another sysinternal tool, AutoRun, and we're able to turn it off, reboot, and oh, by the way, the boot times decreased dramatically. You know, we kind of expected that.
Just by switching off antivirus.
Yes, and it was a number, it's services and you know, things in the run key and all kinds of things. So we turn off all that just for, you know, proof of concept, and now the file copies almost instantly. In fact, we let them use the VDI machine for, you know, about half an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And he said it was as fast or faster than a physical.
Nice.
Which is what we expected it to be, you know, during the concept phase. We didn't expect it to have everything sluggish. So
no, and let's not blame antivirus per se. I can think of a half a dozen different tools, as soon as they work at the low-level disk mapping, are just going to fight with the virtualization of disks.
Yeah, I never want to sit here and blame, you know, anything like that.
Sure.
What it turned out to be, though, was there was a rule in place, an exclusion, but it was applying to the C drive.
Right.
And in this particular implementation, there's another drive letter,
mm-hmm.
and it wasn't excluded on that other drive letter.
Oh, I see.
Once we fixed the exclusion, things were working a lot better.
And so because you can't live, you have antivirus on for a reason, not for fun. So you can't just turn it off. You have to. It's just a diagnostic process. You shut it off. Now we see it's better. Now we got to figure out, well, what's wrong with our antivirus configuration that it's impacting performance as much as it is.
Yeah, and I, you know, me and most of the other people, we don't sit here and we're not going to point fingers and say, you know, this isn't what it is. What we'll do is we'll say, is there anything we can do to help make it better? You know,
sure.
Can we help with developer support, or can we, you know?
And there is some potential there that there could be a VDI optimized version of that antivirus product, as well as just the correct configuration for operating in this environment.
As a matter of fact, there is. In their case, this one vendor we work with, mm-hmm. they have a newer version. We just haven't been able to get to that yet because
right.
it's expensive and it's, you know, it requires more infrastructure. So
when it speaks to me as an administrator saying, I've got to talk to my vendors about what they recommend for VDI optimization, like, have you tested your product in VDI? What's the correct configuration? What's the correct version? Like, it's worth knowing those things, because it's all these little low-level rules, I think, that really bite you. You know, we're doing this bit of deception to get these advantages in virtualization, and they have consequences.
This is true. That's very true. And I'll tell you, you know, with the VDI, so there's the client experience itself. So we had a lot of problems at first, anyway, with the servers also.
Mm-hmm.
Some of those were antivirus related, you know, and we kind of went through the same iterative process of one thing we found that helped was we enabled the antivirus logging, and it showed us, you know, what it was scanning and whatnot.
Sure.
We found, you know, it would try to scan a file, it would lock the file for some period of time, and if it couldn't scan it, it would finally give up. And that was these delays we were seeing.
Oh, yeah.
It was maddening.
Anytime we talked about the logging scripts as well and boot times. Anytime you see a process struggling, repeatedly trying something and ultimately failing, it ends up being many seconds per try.
Mm-hmm.
And those add up when that's going on all the time.
So we had a pretty serious one with our Hyper-V server. So we're running 2008 R2.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we always patch well, but they're not always running the latest, you know, hot fixes, which nobody really does, because, you know, how are you supposed to know?
You're only supposed to apply hot fixes if there's something broken in your environment.
I'd like to talk about that, and that's a topic I would love to talk about that another time.
It's a whole other thing all by itself. I mean, as a guy who runs his own Exchange server, every time I see a hot fix, I'm like, do I have time for this? Do I really need this?
That's true. So what we found, though, was in Cluster, you have this process called RHS.exe. It's a resource hosting subsystem,
mm-hmm.
and that's what hosts your resources. You know, and in this case, a resource was a virtual machine. We have these servers built, 8-node clusters, with, you know, something like 60 machines per node. You get about 480 or so machines per cluster. And what we were seeing was all of a sudden you'd get this error, the RHS process deadlocked, and then it would just stop. It would go down. And the deadlock is actually a timeout, and there's lots of good TechNet blogs on this.
Mm-hmm.
short was, in that one, it was timing out because it was unable to access a file, and the file it kept complaining about was the XML file for the for the virtual machine configuration. Mm-hmm. And we were able to turn on the antivirus logging. We found that the antivirus, as soon as VMM, the virtual machine manager on that cluster node, was trying to read or edit that configuration file, the antivirus software would jump in, lock the file, and say, hold on there, you're not scanning this yet, or you're not going to, I'm going to scan it first.
Yeah, I'm going to check this for you.
And RHS has a timeout period. If it can't work with the file within a certain timeout period, it just stops. And when that stops, there's like 40 or 50 VMs, they all go down.
Look at the bat. You know, the consequences are so much more dire than the activity. Like, you're just backing up and going, you understand what you did here, right?
And it was always the same thing. And the other problem is, if you have your other cluster nodes that are all loaded up, you know, and they don't have a lot of headroom, all of a sudden you've got 50 VMs that have to be brought up. You're having a whole cluster that's having problems for quite a while.
Right.
So anyway, there was some guidance that we later found that said you can increase the time that RHS will wait before it declares deadlock. And that was a good workaround. That helped us. And the other one was, we checked the antivirus log and we found that it was scanning using a sort of a UNC path instead of like a drive letter.
Right.
Because we're using cluster shared volumes.
Yep.
And though we had an exclusion for, like, for example, C cluster storage, which is the CSV, mm-hmm. it was scanning like whack whack, you know, volume name.
Right. So you had the wrong kind of exclude. It didn't recognize that those were actually the same things to be excluded because they were two different mappings.
Yeah, and then so we got the right exclusion in place, and we dramatically improved the stability of that whole environment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There were some other things we did too. We applied some hot fixes that we found for Hyper-V. Some of them are actually pretty critical. And
just to be clear here, I mean, is it actually necessary to have antivirus be scanning an XML configuration file? Is there a risk there?
Well, that was our the thing of it is, even though we had that, we already had an exclusion in place.
Right.
Because they know, okay, we're not going to scan. We're not even going to try. We're okay with not scanning that folder.
Right. But they had the wrong exclusion. They excluded it through direct path versus UNC path. And so the antivirus was still doing its thing. So you're already annoyed at the antivirus. Like, I told you not to do that. Why are you doing it? Then you realize you've told it the wrong thing.
Exactly. So it's using like a mount point path.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's an unintended consequence.
No, I get that. You have to walk through all of these different things. And like I said, turning on the log and see what the antivirus is actually doing. So you can see it's scanning something you told it not to because he's going to it through a different path. That's great knowledge. And you're only going to get that from looking at the log file.
Exactly. That was a lifesaver. You have to, you know, either go into, if you don't have admin permission, you know, you have to get it or have somebody else do it for you and then go change the setting and maybe restart the app. But then you get this logging.
Right. Yeah. Let's jump back to patches for Hyper-V, specifically to optimize for VDI.
Well, I can't remember all the, just off the top of my head, all the patches that are out there right now for mm-hmm. Hyper-V, but we were, during our iterative process, we were looking at, you know, I think it was about performance, some of those patches, and they're all post SP1. So, I know there was at least one fix for RHS.exe. There's been some fixes for cluster. But there's a number of different fixes that you want to kind of look at when you go researching for VDI or for Hyper-V.
But we still have these basic axiomatic statement of patch to the most current version you can. It's worth it.
Usually, yeah, there's a lot of debate. You know, should
really?
You do that or should you stick with the old paradigm of, you know, don't patch unless it's broken? My personal opinion is in most cases, I'd rather not have the blue screen ahead of time.
Right.
So let's go ahead and do the patch. If the rest of the world has already fixed this bug, why do we have to encounter it?
I'm with you. But I'm also the mindset that the real message that I get from Microsoft around the hotfix, especially, you know, the Exchange guys are pretty explicit about this, is this was intended to fix a specific problem. It has not gone through the full set of regression testing. You need to test your environment with this hotfix if you're going to use it. So, or wait for the service pack.
That's true. And that's why, you know, you get me started talking about service packs, because with 2008 R2, there's no service pack coming.
Right. It's the next service pack is 2012.
Exactly. Oh, and by the way, one of the things in 2012 with that RHS problem, if there's a problem like that, it won't affect the other resources. So
right.
That's a big improvement that was made in clustering in 2012.
Yeah. But I think there is a strong, and we've done a number of shows along this line that shows 2012 has made some important improvements at the infrastructure level that make it one of the most compelling OSs I've seen in a long time. It's like, why would you struggle with this when you know 2012 will make it go away?
Yeah, that's a great point too. The service pack paradigm, you remember with NT, we had what, 6.5 service packs?
Sure. 6.5. I love that we agree that it was 6.5.
ST6A.
6A. Thank you very much. But the service pack model, the hotfix model, all these things are in flux right now. I mean, clearly, we're changing our minds to some degree. And Microsoft breaks their own rules. Every so often, they push out a service pack that's actually a feature add. And that makes me angry when that happens.
That's because the whole... So there's still a debate, and what it is the service pack model has to evolve.
Yeah.
The OS has evolved dramatically from what it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of debate right now. I've actually had some input into this. One of the ideas that I have is to make these hotfixes, put them out on the download center.
Yep.
They don't have to be published through WSUS directly.
No, and I'd argue they shouldn't be.
They don't have to be, because then, you know, now you have these new batches of fixes that come up and administrators are looking at them going, wow.
You get back to this idea that a hot fix should be something that you go after because you have a problem, not because they're being presented to you.
I would like to see maybe roll-ups once in a while, though,
yep.
Because I've heard a lot of people complain, you know, well, after SP1 for Windows 7, there's, I don't know how many fixes. I'm sure there's like 100.
Oh, sure. Yeah, and it's not trivial. It's a long time. You know, you spend a whole day getting your WSUS and your MDT set up correctly again.
Like, oh, that's, I know.
It's not, these patches aren't free, you know? This is a lot of people's time involved in implementing these things when they come down the pipe.
And then, you know, a lot of places where I work, you have fairly large networks that have no outside connections whatsoever.
Yep.
And so, you know, pointing it to Windows Update or whatnot is just not an option.
Not an option, no. Somebody's got to package it correctly and push it onto the images correctly and test everything. And especially with this, you know, 20, 30 fixes, you break something. Now you're unraveling all that stuff and trying each one individually. Like, you know, I'm a big believer in the idea of, okay, let's give them the whole package, give it a stab, because once in a while, this just works. When it doesn't, all right, go back to the old image. Let's put them in one at a time. And that's hours and hours of work.
Yes, literally. And one of the other side problems that you have is, you know, like me, for example, I like to debug, or the process monitor tools, you can extend their capability by plugging in debugging symbols.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you get an OS that's got, you know, 50 or 100 hotfixes and security updates, now your symbols don't match anymore and you have a hard time. You have to go figure out a way to, there's ways to do that. You can create a manifest and go, take that to, you know, an internet connected machine,
sure,
download the symbols, but then you still have to bring them back in and,
yeah,
integrate them in. It's a pain.
Well, and we still got to get back to this idea that my job actually wasn't just patching machines. Like, I have other things to do here. And getting your brain wrapped around this big patch set, especially when it comes down every week, you know, it's not cheap. And often when we have these flurries, it's because there's something pretty important in there. And you got to figure out which one it is and what do I have to focus on.
One of the other things that I brought up, and I'm still sort of debating this with some of the folks in Redmond, is some of these patches that they really should be marked as important, because if you're addressing, it's a cut and dried blue screen.
Yep.
And you have a hot fix for that. Why is that not critical?
Yeah. How does that one standing up by itself? Generally, we only see criticals when we've got newly found vulnerabilities seem to be the ones that come up critical, which is fine. They are criticals, but things that, you know, consistent hardware, this driver is borked and then you will have this problem. That's worthy of a critical.
Yeah, exactly. And, I've talked to some of the PMs and they explained to me all the reasons why. And I completely agree with it and understand. I don't have any problems with any of the reasoning, but I just think that we want to, evolve our reasoning over time as our OS evolves to help everybody.
Yeah, we're definitely in a time of flux here. And VDI, I think, is part of this flux. We're starting to treat our hardware more differently, treat our desktops differently. It's really interesting. So let's bring it back to the VDI story, Robert. Where do you send folks when they need to know more?
I send them, actually everybody comes to me when they need to know more. I will send them to usually, like TechNet blogs or, call in if you have to get a case going or...
Don't be shy to use your PSS once in a while. They're really good.
They are extremely good, and we're there 24 hours. There's always somebody going to answer the phone.
Yep.
You can do web response. Even sometimes the news groups, the Microsoft news groups, they're staffed by Blue Badge people, not always, but sometimes, those can be a good resource as well. I've seen great information conveyed on those. The blogs, on MSDN, on TechNet, there's some fantastic, like I was telling you about that video on Channel 9, Defrag Tools. Great. There's a lot of great information out there. Sometimes maybe a little too much because you have to sift through it.
But sure.
Maybe better to have too much than not enough.
That's true. All right, Robert. Well, thanks so much for talking to me about VDI.
Thank you very much for having me.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.